Let's look at some of the, what I call many myths, some of the segmented myths all through our culture that people believe that you have to have debt to survive. Let's look at that for a second. Myth: you need a credit card to rent a car or to make purchases online. How many of you know that's false? Raise your hand. You know that you can do both of those things with a debit card. A debit card will do all of that. I don't carry any credit cards, and I haven't for 20 years. I have two pieces of plastic of that type in my pocket, in the front pocket that I carry my driver's license in there, and I've got a debit card on my personal account and a debit card on my business, and that's it. And I travel more than any two of you put together. I'm all over the place, international and everything. So this idea that you have to have a credit card to somehow exist on this planet is marketing. To the point that you believed it. It's mythology. Myth: I pay mine off every month with no annual fee. I get brownie points, air miles, and a free hat. Truth: over 100 million Americans do not pay their balance off every month. And according to USA Today, 63% of the people that file bankruptcy, which is most of them, said the reason they filed bankruptcy was credit card debt. That was their breakdown. That was their problem. And here's the deal. When you spend with plastic, you don't feel it. When you spend with cash, you feel it. You have an ouchie moment when you do that. I mean, think about it. If you get Uncle Benjamin Franklin and you carry him around a little while, you get you a little stack of Uncle Ben's $100 bills, eventually Uncle Ben becomes like part of the family. Uncle Ben. And then you get ready to buy something with this puppy, you're going to feel it, like we talked about in the last lesson. You're going to feel it. I want you to learn to feel money again. And you'll feel pain if you carry Uncle Ben around. Because then when you get ready to buy something, it's not like you're buying something. It's like you're putting a family member out for adoption. I mean, think about it. That black tray comes at the restaurant with the bill in it. That's like Uncle Ben's coffin. Bye, Ben. Because you know he's leaving and you're not going to see him again. He's not coming back. You have a moment. But when you pay with plastic, you don't feel it. McDonald's found this. That's why they were the first fast food restaurant to go to taking plastic several years ago. Any of you old enough to remember before fast food took plastic? Yeah, the reason was McDonald's did a focus group study. They're excellent marketers. They did a great job. And with their focus group study, they found that the average person using plastic spends 47% more than the person who pays cash. So here's what happens in a quick serve restaurant, a fast food restaurant. You walk in with this and you're going, supersize that. I'll have the apple pie and I'll pay for his. You walk in there with this, you're like, dollar menu, you're on your own. You have a moment right here with this, don't you? Well, Dave, I get all these benefits. I get airline miles. So 75% of the airline miles are never redeemed. Besides that, here's the deal. I've met with thousands of millionaires. I've never met a millionaire that says, Dave, you know, made all my money with airline miles. That was my breakthrough. My financial breakthrough was my Discover points. Yeah, you know those reward cards? That's what put me up. I got free airline tickets and boom, I'm a millionaire, just like that. Instead, what happens is you spend more and you spend more and you spend more and you spend more because you're not feeling money anymore. And you've lost the idea that personal finance is 80% behavior. It's only 20% head knowledge. MIT did a study that was printed in Carnegie Mellon magazine. And what they came up with was this. They discovered with an MRI study that when you spend cash, it activates the pain centers of the brain. And when you spend with plastic, it does not activate the brain. As a matter of fact, they found several cases where there was no brain. No, just kidding. So spending with plastic costs you more because you're going to spend more, obviously, and you're going to go into debt and you're not going to pay it off because 100 million people did not pay their balances off. Everybody says they did, but it's like this cultural, you even lie to yourself like that. Well, there was that one time and then there was that other time and then there was that other time. When you really go back through your records, you'll find that they've tagged you with several fees and several interest rates along the way, even those of you that are quote-unquote disciplined. I use my credit cards wisely, and I take advantage of this multi-billion-dollar company who does extreme levels of studies on my behavior. I've got it figured out. I'm going to beat them up. See, that just doesn't work. You're losing this battle. That's why their building is bigger than your house. Myth. I'll make sure my teenager gets a credit card so he or she can learn to be responsible with money. Oh, goody! Let's go ahead and make sure that we put the curse on the whole family tree. Make sure the rest of the family's broke like we are. This is a dumb idea. This is not working. Truth. Teens are a huge target of credit card companies today. And it's had an effect even in colleges. Colleges all across America are experiencing a dropout rate. And see, when I think of people dropping out of college, I think of people dropping out of college because they didn't make the grades. But the truth is, the number one reason people are dropping out of college right now, debt, credit card debt, and financial trouble is the number one reason people are leaving college. The first company that gives you a credit card, you have tremendous brand loyalty with them. I'll be doing an event, maybe at a book signing or something, chopping up credit cards. And I'll have someone come up and I'll cut up 5, 6, 7, one lady 17, whatever credit cards, right? And I'll be chopping them up. And then I'll look at them and I'll go, where's the other one? Well, I've had this one since college. So? See the emotional tie to that? See how people, don't you wish you ran a company that did a great job of marketing like that, where people would be defensive and emotional to retain the use of your product? Wow. That is excellent marketing. And they've gone far beyond now, far beyond marketing to teenagers. Now they're doing an immoral form of marketing, I call it, called kiddie branding. Now, kiddie branding is when you teach little children how you want them to think so that later they use your product. And I really think this is just improper, and a lot of consumer advocates agree with me, and many of us have gone after some of these companies. But it's out of control. You remember the whole ad campaign Visa had out? Life takes Visa. You remember that ad campaign? Did you know that now the game of life no longer has money in it? It has only a Visa in it. So when your kid plays the game of life, are you hearing the message? To win at the game of life, you need Visa. This is your 10-year-old, 12-year-old's message. And they hear this over and over and over again. So it's no wonder when they go on the college campus the first time, some bozo standing there handing out free t-shirts, they sign up because after all, life takes Visa. And of course, Barbie's gone crazy on credit cards. I love Barbie. She's awesome. I'm not mad at Barbie. Our girls had Barbie. We got Barbie parts all over the house, right? But Barbie's got her own little shopping spree and Barbie Fashion Fever, all these different Barbie products, and they all have credit cards in them. The commercial for this one right here, the little girl's swiping it, and she goes, "It's so good, I never run out of money." This is the message that's being sent to your 5-year-old girl, your 4-year-old girl, learning how to handle money. And the worst one of all that just broke my heart was when I found the new Monopoly electronic banking version. There's no money. How can you have Monopoly without money? Say it isn't so. Next thing you know, they'll be emailing you the deed. Oh, I mean, how are we little nerds ever going to learn to be a banker? There's no money in there. It just kills me. And it started with this product several years ago. This was one of the first ones. This is Cool Shopping Barbie from the 90s. Cool Shopping Barbie was sponsored by MasterCard. They gave Mattel a ton of money. It came complete with a full-size MasterCard and a little MasterCard taped to her pretty little hand. And again, we're not mad at Barbie. We wish she'd eat a little better, but we're not mad at her. And so, I mean, it's unbelievable. So here's what happens when your kid scans out. Now, there's no cash that came with this, right? This is how you go shopping. Mommy goes shopping, and this is how I'm going to go shopping, and we're playing shopping, right? Is this is being drilled in the kid's head, right? And here's what your little kid hears over and number one, they're holding a MasterCard. They're not holding a Discover card. They're not holding a Visa. MasterCard is drilled into their psyche, right? This is just wrong, people. And here's what happens when she scans out. Listen to this.
Credit approved.
credit approved. You airhead. Well, let's deal with some big boy and big girl toys. How about car payments? Myth, car payments are a way of life. You'll always have a car payment. How many of you ever heard that one? I've heard that myth most of my life. And it usually, no one says it with enthusiasm like, hey, car payments are a way of life. You're always going to have a car payment. No, they're always kind of whining. You know what I'm saying? It's like, car payments are a way of life. You're always going to have a car payment. The little man can't get ahead. The little man hadn't got a shot. Isn't it ridiculous? And this victim mentality, rather than this idea that I get to make choices that affect my future and affect my destiny and give me the power to change my family tree. And it all goes back to that whole thing of I'm going to surrender and I'm going to work for the company store my whole life. I'm going to be a rat in a wheel, run, 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 run. All the money comes in, all the money goes out, only the names are changed to protect the innocent. The truth is the typical millionaire stays away from car payments by driving reliable used cars. That's how they became a millionaire. The average car payment in North America today is $492 over 63 months, according to the Federal Reserve. Now think about this. We talked about this in super savings. We saw compound interest. Let's take $492 and invest it instead of putting it in a car payment. From age 30 to age 70, it's $5.8 million. I hope you like the car. It's unbelievable the amount of money that costs you to drive that car payment over and over and over. When instead, what grandma would do is she'd take that $492, use common sense, and save up to buy something, wouldn't she? $492 into a cookie jar for 10 months, 10 times 492 is $4,920, $5,000. I can take $5,000 and go out of state highway that way or that way or that way, and within a few hours, I'll find me a little Honda Accord or a Ford Taurus or a Chevy Cavalier or something like that for $4,000 or $5,000 that'll get me back and forth to work without a car payment. Now, if I then, since I don't have a car payment, save a car payment again for 10 more months, now I got another $5,000. Can I put $5,000 with a $5,000 car I just bought and get me a $10,000 car? Say yes. Could I do it one more time? That'd be 10 more months. That'd be a $15,000 car. That's 30 months, 2.5 years. But we want it, and we want it right now. Don't you dare tell me I can't have what I want. And the number one answer on my radio show when people call the Dave Ramsey Show and they're in trouble and they're wanting help with something, the number one answer has become sell the car. One old boy called up and he's like, Dave, I got this issue and I'm having trouble paying my payments. And I said, well, how much do you owe on your car? I don't have a car payment. You don't have a car payment. How much do you owe on your truck?
Oh, ha, 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 ha.
Oh, really?
How much do you have? $41,000.
On your truck?
Yeah.
How much is your truck payment?
$763.
What? How much is your house payment?
Dave, we live in a double wide. It's $551.
Dude, if your truck payment is bigger than your house payment, you might be a redneck. Really? Wow! Think we found the basis for your financial troubles. Seriously, sell the car, sell the car, sell the car. It's so bad, we were in Indianapolis, Indiana, doing an event a while back with about 6,000 people out there, and a guy came up at the break and handed me the Indiana Auto and RV Trader Magazine. You know, the Trader Magazine you can get in your neighborhood with the pictures of the cars that are for sale, and it's free, or it's a dollar or something, and you can post your car in there for sale. On the front cover is a 2000 Dodge Ram, 3500. $34,900, Dave Ramsey says sale. Now, I'm not against you having a nice car. I want you to have a nice car. I just don't want your nice car to have you. I don't want it to own your future. I don't want it to own your children's future. I want you to drive like no one else, so later you can drive like no one else. And we need to clear something up, too. Some of you people are sending me emails with pictures of your hoopties. your old beat up, broken down car that you're driving while you're getting out of debt, smoke coming out the back. I'm with you on that. That's what I did. I drove like no one else so that later I can drive like no one else. But please don't send me an email and say, that's your Dave car. Your really nice car when you get out of debt and get wealthy, that's your Dave car. The next myth is fleecing your car, leasing your car, is what sophisticated financial people do. You should always fleece things that go down in value. There are, after all, tax advantages. There's a lot of tax advantages to doing stupid things. There really are. A lot of possibilities out there. And of course, there's only tax advantages if you own a business, in which case you can own a vehicle in your business and you can straight line depreciate the vehicle or write the mileage off without having debt on the vehicle. So this idea that the only way you can write it off and fleece it is not sophisticated at all. It just says you don't know the tax code. That's all it means. Okay. So the truth is, Consumer Reports Smart Money Magazine and my calculator says that fleecing a car is the most expensive way to finance and operate a vehicle. The National Auto Dealers Association tells us that the most profitable square footage on the new car dealer's lot is the shop and the finance office. They make more money on the shop and on the finance office than they do on the sale of cars. They sell cars so they can get in the finance business. They sell cars so they have the opportunity to repair them. This is where they make most of their money. Now, I'm not mad at you if you're a new car dealer. I've got family that are new car dealers. I'm not mad at new cars. I just want you to stop and think and realize what their motivations are and what's driving their decisions when you wander onto the lot and go, oh, well, I really beat them up today. They'll just about give you that car in order to get you on those payments because they make their money on the stream of payments. They make their money on bringing you back in and doing the work on the car. That's the most profitable area. Tom Stanley, who wrote the book The Millionaire Next Door, has written a book since then called Stop Acting Rich. Stop acting rich when you're not, in other words. In order to become wealthy, you live like no one else, so later you can live like no one else. No discipline seems pleasant at a time, but it yields a harvest of righteousness. Stop acting rich when you're not. In that book, he has discovered that 80% of millionaires have never leased a car. Well, I wouldn't need to lease a car if I was a millionaire. No, you got this backwards. You would be a millionaire if you didn't lease a car. See, that you get the chicken and egg thing confused here. You have to get out of the debt that makes you a millionaire. Millionaires don't fall for these kinds of things. Now, here's the deal. There's a real simple thing in business called best practices. Find someone who's winning at something and copy them. If you want to be thin, figure out what thin people do, what they eat and how they exercise, and do that. If I hire a new personal trainer, I don't want them walking in being 400 pounds. We got an issue here. I want 8 packs, right? 9 packs, 12 packs, whatever. Greek God, right? You know what I'm saying? I want best practices, don't I? You know, if you've been married 16 times, I hope this one sticks, but I'm not reading your book on marriage. You know, your track record's not there, right? And so I'm not going to talk to broke people about their theory about money. Figure out what rich people are doing and do rich people stuff. You get to be rich people. If you're rich people and you do poor people stuff, you will become poor people. If you're poor people and you do rich people stuff long enough, you'll become rich people. So let's figure out what millionaires are doing with cars. They drive a 2-year-old or older car because they don't care what you think. They don't have what the Bible calls a fear of man, a need to impress. They have no need to impress. They don't care what you think about their clothes. They don't care what you think about their summer trip. They do these things for them and for their family. They don't do it so you feel good about them based on their interaction with stuff. This is a millionaire mindset. Figure out how millionaires think and learn to think that way. They don't lease cars. That's the first one to remember right there in this car issue. No way around it. Myth, you can get a good deal on a new car. Not unbelievable. A new car loses 60 to 70% of its value in the first 4 years. This is a $28,000 car, loses $16,000 in 4 years. That's rough, down to $11,000. That's roughly $100 a week. So if you're driving a brand new car, $28,000 or $29,000, once a week on the way to work, roll down the window, throw a $100 bill out to get the effect of what's going on. That's how bad you're getting your tail kicked. If you bought a mutual fund that went down that fast, you'd go crazy. If your house went down that fast, you'd go crazy. If you bought anything else that went down that fast, you'd go crazy. But with a car, you're just like, oh, it's holding its value. What? It's not holding anything except your money, and it's going down the toilet. It's gone. You're losing money hand over fist. But Dave, I need a safe car. I'm sorry. I grew up in the generation where we were sleeping in the back window and they slammed on the brake and threw us in the floorboard. Okay. So, I mean, the only airbag in there was the mother-in-law, you know, that was it. And somehow I survived with minimal brain damage. So, I don't want you to do something silly and out of control, but this idea that somehow you're chasing faux safety, and it is faux safety, a really bad car wreck, there's not enough airbags in the world to protect you. You know, yes, you want something reliable. Yes, you want something reasonably safe. But we're not talking about driving junk forever. I'm talking about driving like no one else, so later I can drive like no one else. I drive really nice stuff now, and it's got all that stuff in it. You know, I don't even know how to turn some of it on, and that's okay. But you know, we drove junk to be able to get there for a while, and we paid cash because the borrower's slave to the lender, and we're not going back into debt no matter what. Myth, the home equity loan is good for consolidation and is a substitute for an emergency fund. Truth, don't go into debt when you're in the middle of an emergency. You'll make the emergency a dad-blame crisis. Think, I'm going to go into debt when everything's bad. How is that logical? People go, I don't need an emergency fund. I'll just use my home equity loan. Exactly the wrong time to be going into debt is when you're broke and don't have a job. Hello? Think. But everybody just throws that out like it's some kind of a sophisticated answer. Craziness. Myth, debt consolidation saves interest and you get one smaller payment. The problem is this. We've been talking about this since the start of Financial Peace University. The problem with my money is the guy in my mirror. It's not a math problem. And so what happens with debt consolidation, a buddy of mine is a regional manager for one of these finance companies, and he tells me 88% of the time, 9 out of 10 times basically, that people do debt consolidation loans, they put all their debts over here, they don't change their habits, and so more grow over here. You've got to change you. It's not a math problem. It's a you problem. That's the problem. So truth is, debt consolidation is actually a con. That's why we call it consolidation. Myth, by co-signing a loan, I'm going to help out my friend or a relative. Little Johnny needs a car. We're going to help little Johnny. Joey and Susie got married. We're going to co-sign and get them a house. Oh, let's just make sure they're broke. Truth, the bank requires a co-signer because the person isn't likely to repay. They're not going to pay the bill. The bank knows this. This is why they want the co-signer. I love the contemporary English version of the scriptures. The contemporary English version is a real plain-spoken, modern-day language version, and it says in Proverbs 17:18 that it's stupid to guarantee someone else's loan. It's stupid to guarantee someone else's loan. Now, if you don't like that, you could go to the old or the New King James Version, which says, one lacking in sense signs surety for another. It's a little nicer, but it still makes the point. Don't do this. Hope I haven't been unclear. Myth, you need to take out a credit card or a car loan and build up your credit score. How many of you have ever heard you need to build up your credit? I got to build my credit. The biggest myth that's out there, the great FICO. We love you, oh great FICO. FICO score. I need my FICO score to go up. I got to work on my FICO score. What do we do to repair our FICO score? We got to do everything we can to make FICO, 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 FICO. Oh, FICO, you are the provider of all things. We bring you offerings, great FICO. We bow at your base, FICO. We love you, FICO. Thank you for furnishing us all of this debt. So I was on one of the TV shows, one of the network TV shows, and The anchor said, so Dave, how would the person that's viewing us this morning, what would they do to go about raising their FICO score? And I said, I don't think they should. And he said, do what? I said, I don't think they should. The FICO score is an I love debt score. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, the algorithm, the mathematics that are involved in putting together the FICO score are all about debt. And I don't think you should raise your FICO score. I think you should get out of debt, and then you'll become wealthy because you won't have any payments. And he said, but all the other financial people say, and I said, well, I don't care. They're wrong. So, of course, after trashing FICO, I got home, and FICO was all upset, and they're calling us and going, we want to come on the Dave Ramsey Show and debate with him about FICO. And we're like, no, you really don't. You just think you do. But, the truth is the FICO score is an I Love Debt score. We actually went to myfico.com and pulled their information off of their website. And what we discovered was this. We discovered that 35% of your FICO score is determined by your debt payment history. 30% is based on your level of debt, 15% is based on the length of time you've been in debt, 10% is based on new debt, and 10% is based on the type of debt. Credit, debt, it's debt, right? It's all about your interaction with debt. So the only way to get your FICO score up is to play kissy face with the bank a lot. This is the only way to get your FICO score up. And what will happen is as soon as you pay off everything and close all the accounts, your FICO score will disappear. You won't have one. How will I survive? Money. It's a weird idea. The FICO people got so upset with me, I thought, well, I wonder what my FICO score is. So we went to myfico.com and we put in my stuff to get my FICO score. And it says, our apologies, an error has occurred. We regret that we were unable to fill your score power order request because your credit report does not currently contain enough information to meet the minimum scoring criteria required to calculate a FICO score. Apparently mine's zero. In order for a FICO score to be calculated, the report must contain at least one account which has been open for 6 months or more, at least one account that's been updated in the past 6 months, and no indication of being deceased. I think that was a threat. So the bottom line is this, the only way you have a FICO score is to borrow money and pay it back. I can hand you $1 million and it doesn't change your FICO score 1 point unless you pay it on debt. Here's how whacked our culture is, though. I go down here to rent a little apartment, a little one-bedroom apartment, and they pull my credit, and they say, Mr. Ramsey, you don't have a FICO score. We can't rent to you. Now, I can write a check and buy the whole complex, but I can't rent an apartment there. See, this is how messed up this whole thing is. But this is all tied into this lending culture, this debt culture. We're going to stay in debt. We're going to stay in debt. We're going to stay in debt. And so we have to worship at the altar of the FICO. Oh, we have to do everything we can, make sure. And then they come and they're bragging and they go, Dave, I've got over an 800 FICO score. And I go, I'm really sorry. That's sad that you've given the bank that much of your money in order to create this false measure of wealth, because it's not a measure of wealth. Mathematically, we just looked at the components of it. It is a measure of how much you've interacted with debt. That's all it is. And so your grandmother can die and leave you $100 million, and you have not 1 point change in your FICO score. It does not measure financial well-being. It measures how much you have paid to the bank. That's it. So the biggest myth of all, the overarching myth that is the umbrella, if you will, across all of these is debt is a tool that should be used to create prosperity. That is the lie that has been sold to our culture, that the best way to become prosperous is to use borrowed money. That is perpendicular to what the Scripture says. The Scripture is very clear on this. It is not used to build wealth in Scripture. It's not. Saved money is used to build wealth. Giving, there's a tie in between giving and wealth building. But there is no tie between debt and anything but bad things in the Scriptures. And so the truth is, debt is really proof that the borrower is slave to the lender. And think about it. Let's talk again about rich people. Let's talk about the Forbes 400, the 400 wealthiest people in North America as rated by Forbes magazine. Let's think about them for just a second. These are the 400 richest people in North America. 7 out of 10 of them started with nothing and became one of the richest people in North America today. They're household names. You know a lot of the names of their companies. You know a lot of the names of these men and women. They are amazing stories. When surveyed, the 400 richest people in North America were asked the question,
What is the number one key for people to build wealth? And they replied that to become and stay debt-free is the fastest way to become wealthy. 75% of them replied that way. 75%. So think about this. How much could you give if you didn't have any payments? Wow. How much of this world could we as believers change? How many hungry kids would get fed? How many ministries would be done literally in the United States and around the world if we just didn't have any payments? Because we'd have plenty for ourselves. It's not all going to somebody else over here. I'm not spending all of my working hours working for the man. Nobody's got his thumb on my neck anymore. I have financial peace. Two words that don't go together, like airline service. You know? It just doesn't make sense. Well, it doesn't make sense because Scripture a lot of times doesn't make sense until you're living in it and walking in it. And you sense this peace that passes understanding that Christ brings to our hearts. But also Christ brings us these teachings in Scripture that shows us exactly how to live our lives and how to be able to win.